the absolute nirvana in business, in our opinion, is the gross margin percentage. It's such simple mathematics. If you want to achieve a particular valuation, you need to turn over a great deal less if your gross margin percentage is higher. So it's much easier to attain valuations on a business which has had its gross margin percentage driven up. And guess what? That's what increased efficiency, increased productivity does. It increases our profitability and allows us to achieve our outcomes far more quickly than we otherwise would have. It's about identifying what are the value drivers. What are the bits of our business that really do make a difference to our profitability? So it's identifying the value drivers, measuring them, and coming up with the right KPIs to ensure that all of the teams and all the people involved in producing value know exactly what their numbers are, and it's all consistent and drives everyone in the same direction. So it's about the ability to pick the right value drivers and measure them in an effective way with the teams.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm your host and CEO, co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's purchasing with magical features, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've invited along Ben Meakey from Acuity Associates. So why is Ben here? Well, if you were a very dedicated listener, you would have listened to episode 44, where you heard the origin story of Procurement Express, and you heard me interview Jason Cohen. Jason gave a talk about the attributes of the ideal bootstrap SaaS business, and modestly, I think we've done that largely due to Jason's advice. And what Ben has managed to develop is something very interesting and something I've seen nowhere else in the market so far, which is, from my wording, not his, is that he has developed the attributes of the ideal CFO. And if you're someone like me who is in a growing business, you maybe are trying to make your first CFO hire. You don't necessarily really know what that looks like. You don't know what good looks like. It's quite confusing. You think it might be an accountant. It might be someone banking. You're something in between. And it's actually a lot more to it. So what Ben has done at Acuity Associates is develop a range of training and services, and we'll hear more about this now, to educate someone like me about how to work with your first CFO and identify one that will benefit your business. So Ben, thanks very much for coming along. Maybe just give us a bit of background on yourself. I've tried to do a poor man's version there, so maybe you can give us the real version. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here, James. I kicked off my career at Deloitte, came out of there, worked in the entertainment industry, which seemed like the right thing to do in my 20s. Ended up founding a record company and a retail chain. We put record shops inside Urban Outfitters as they grew throughout Europe. Then I exited that, and then I got lucky. I joined a startup called First Source. And First Source was, and still is, an outsourcing business, BPO. I was the fifth person to join, not the founder, but heading up finance. And we grew that company from the five of us to 13,000 employees in 6 years. And then we listed it for a nine-figure sum. So that was really fun. And we generated, I think, quite a lot of shareholder value in a relatively short amount of time. And I learned two fundamental things on that journey. The first was the inflection points that a business needs to go through to get from soup to nuts, as they say. So you start as a startup, you then run around becoming cash flow positive because you're either funded or you're bootstrapped. But either way, there's a great day when you realize that your income is greater than your costs. And everyone throws a party, and quite right. At that stage, you are a project-based organization. So that means that if something happens, you sitting around the board, this might sound familiar, and then someone will go, right, you, Fred, take care of that. And then something else happens, you go, oh, right, Frederica, you take care of that, please. Now, you can grow a project-based organization, but it's tough because there are distortions within the company that slow us down and bumps in the road that, frankly, we don't need. So the orthodoxy is move from a project-based organization to a process-based organization, and those are much, much easier to grow. I headed the team that turned FirstSource from a project-based organization to a process-based organization. Being head of finance, that's the preserve of finance to do this. And then we yielded huge efficiency and productivity gains, and hockey sticked in terms of the growth. And the final liquidity point, the final infection point, was the liquidity event, where the change of ownership. Now, we didn't have to do that, but whatever the objective of a business is, you want the value of the business or the EBITDA profit to be as high as possible. So the inflection points are start up, get through to cash flow positivity, become a project-based organization, move from that through the next and actually most important inflection point to be a process-based, and then grow and then do what you wish. List it on the stock exchange or keep it or whatever.
Okay, so this is a really nice way to think about it. And I guess I've been, you know, through all of those up to, let's say, the process stage. So the first question is, how do you know you need to be profitable probably before it's worthwhile you get a quote unquote real CFO? You need to be able to complete projects and deliver value. And, you know, everyone has a plan to get punched in the face. So you, I guess in the early days, you just do what it takes to make that happen. And then is it from then on when you're trying to do that on a repeatable basis? Because that's not immediately obvious to me. That sounds more like a COO role that would put processes in. But you're telling me maybe that's something you should look to your CFO to help with.
The only exception I'd make to that is that if you're deeply funded and you're being tasked on gaining market share as opposed to becoming cash flow positive, if there's a different metric that your strategic investor, private equity or venture capital or whatever, has established as your key metric to achieve, then it doesn't apply. But 95%, 99% of the time it does. What does it look like? Well, there are five key competencies that your CFO must have. And by the way, just for the sake of definition, finance director, chief financial officer, for the businesses we're talking about that are emerging mid-market, you know, 10 to 500 employees, it's the head of finance. You know, depending which sector you're in, you might want to call it the CFO, you might want to call it the finance director. Doesn't matter. For the purposes of this call, let's just say FD, finance director, but it's your head finance person. So they need to be an expert scorer, custodian, business partner, catalyst, and strategist. So it's those five key competencies that allow them to be effective in driving a business to be ever more efficient, ever more productive, migrating through that inflection point from project-based to process-based. That is the key competencies that they require. The other way to check whether an FD has the capabilities that you need is to look at their outputs. And it's a very crass thing, but there's a certain list of financial infrastructure, we call it. So that means reports, analysis, forecasts, et cetera, that need to be produced in order to really drive efficiency and productivity insofar as you can. The absolute nirvana in business, in our opinion, is the gross margin percentage. Okay, so it's such simple mathematics. If you want to achieve a particular valuation, you need to turn over a great deal less if your gross margin percentage is higher. So it's much easier to attain valuations on a business which has had its gross margin percentage driven up. And guess what? That's what increased efficiency, increased productivity does. It increases our profitability and allows us to achieve our outcomes far more quickly than we otherwise would have.
Let's work through your taxonomy here because it's quite interesting. I mean, the first one is score, which that's what I would have thought really your CFO is. It sounds, if I'm guessing what it is there, it's kind of what my uncle describes as the wicket keeper. And it's just, you know, it's keeping you out of jail. It's, you know, P&L management reports. That's kind of what I thought a CFO was. So let's just stick on that for a second. Like, how do you know, what are the key skills, what are the attributes of someone who need, you need all of these things, I guess, but like, how do you know you've got someone who can do that?
Well, I think the scorer is probably most about accuracy and precision, mathematics, because if we're going to look at data, and by data we mean information, management information, we want to make sure it's accurate. There are history is littered with businesses that have made decisions based on incorrect data who then ceased to exist or came very close to ceasing to exist. So score is about, it isn't saying at all that the finance director has to do the bookkeeping. What the finance director is entrusted to achieve is a set of processes and systems that mean that accuracy is virtually guaranteed. So that the more junior members of staff, bookkeepers, management accountants, etc., it's almost impossible for them to do their job badly. So it's all about loading accurate information into templates and ensuring that the people who are doing that work, because we certainly don't want our FD doing this more junior level stuff, but we do want the FD to be creating the environment whereby that is done well. There's a recurring theme across all of these competencies, which is that the finance director builds your financial infrastructure and the more junior members of the team operate it. That is the case. So the doing that a finance director does would include building an integrated cash flow forecast model. So let's say, and again, we're bringing in other skills from across the five dimensions here. You would start with the end in mind. That is absolutely rule 1.0 in business. Understand what your objective is, and the time period that you wish to achieve it in. So let's say it's 3 years. Okay, then you would say, I want a business valuation of X, or I want a level of profitability of Y, and or I want to be able to step away, hire a CEO, and they run the business for me, and I just keep it as part of my family portfolio of businesses. Okay, then you step back from that, and then you work out what your resource requirement is, your overheads, what your gross margin is going to be, what you're going to need to turn over, and then bang, you go backwards month by month to today. And then today is where you are now, and that gives you a very clear plan over, in this example, 36 months of the numbers you need to achieve to get to your objective. But you start with the end and you come back. Okay, so that model and the mathematical expression of it is usually best done in Excel or an ERP. Most smaller businesses don't do ERPs. Excel's absolutely fine, so long as you've got the skills to operate it properly. And then you will find yourself in a situation where you can look at it and go, is that realistic? If you decide yes, fine. From that, you then derive your KPIs, key performance indicators. And the best key performance indicators are what I call predictive KPIs. Because most businesses out there look backwards with their numbers, if at all. So they go, what did we do last month? Was it good? It was okay. It was bad, but fine. Then they'll try and make decisions out of it. A predictive KPI means that you can actually do something about it at the time. So for instance, if you know, and we're actually moving quite neatly onto the custodian here, and it's this old anecdote of what gets measured gets done. So if you are measuring the success of your sales team, let's say you've got two people in your sales team, okay, salesperson A, salesperson B, and you know from your business plan that you've created that you need to sell 10 things a month. Okay, fine, that's what it happens to be. So you also know, because you measure it, that you close one sale for every three sales meetings. Okay, so therefore our predictive KPI is 30 sales meetings a month, and that's what we monitor. We don't monitor what the target is. We monitor in a predictive way that the sales team are achieving those 30 meetings, because then we know by the law of averages we'll hit our targets. Then if you measure further and more deeply, let's say that you've got salesperson A closes one in every two meetings, and salesperson B closes one sale in every four meetings. Oh, that's interesting. So we've got some data here, and the data is like, well, why don't we get salesperson A to tell salesperson B what they're doing? And if we can get salesperson B up to closing one in three meetings, then guess what? We're getting more out of our existing team. That's sounding very much like efficiency and productivity gains to me. So there's an example of how the right skilled finance director will generate data, like I've just provided, then use that to make powerful decisions to increase efficiency and productivity in the organization. So that this custodian skill has got a lot to do with commercial acumen. You know, so understanding what are the value drivers.
Yeah, okay, well, because what you said there makes sense, what we call leading and lagging indicators. And, you know, you control the leading indicator, the number of phone calls, number of outreach, the number of demos, and it all strings together. So what I heard from the score, the main thing is that ability to create that model. So it goes in way beyond the financial reporting, be able to bring through the KPIs throughout the organization to be able to run together.
The score is about making sure that the numbers that are reporting through are accurate. So in the example I just gave, it's 1 in 2 for salesperson A and 1 in 4. We're not reporting 1 in 6 and 1 in 8, which would just be wrong. So the score is about making sure that the numbers that are being brought together are accurate.
Okay, so then the custodian, which is the next attribute you have here, this is kind of, I guess, where you're niching into your industry. Is that it? Because how you value a software business is different to a hotel. Tell us about the custodian attribute. What is that? And explain it a bit more for us.
Okay, so again, the FD's job is to set up models whereby we're measuring the right things. And what do we mean by the right things? Well, the right things are the things that we've already established because of our business plan, or the business model, I call it, and which is the mathematical expression of what we're trying to do. And they all feed down, because that's the data we need to be monitoring very closely, because if we don't hit those figures, we're off plan. So the custodian piece is about drawing down from the overall overarching business plan and making sure it's translated into KPIs, leading, lagging, predictive, which are then communicated out throughout the organization and measured as live as we possibly can. So in the example that I've provided, if we notice that the sales team have only done 4 meetings in the first 2 weeks of a month, then we know about it and everyone can roll up their sleeves and get them the remaining 26 meetings in the final two or three weeks of that month. So it's about making sure we're measuring the right things, and that's where the commercial acumen comes in.
Yeah, okay. So, when you say commercial acumen, it's a bit of a catch-all term, but what I'm hearing there is it's really the experience knowing a business model that's relevant to your business. That's the key thing. Okay, I know SaaS businesses. I've worked for 6 of them. This is what they do. They focus on this, this, and this. Forget these other things. And the ability to know which the right things to focus on. And the score sort of persona, if you like, is the one who's able to do that in a detail-oriented, accurate way you can believe in.
It's about identifying what are the value drivers. There's a sort of business speak that some people may have heard before, which is what are the bits of our business that really do make a difference to our profitability? So it's identifying the value drivers, measuring them, and coming up with the right KPIs to ensure that all of the teams and all the people involved in producing value know exactly what their numbers are, and it's all consistent and drives everyone in the same direction. So it's about the ability to pick the right value drivers and measure them in an effective way with the teams.
The next attribute you have is being a partner, a good partner. What does that mean?
So partner or business partnering, this is ensuring that everybody outside of finance has the right level of resource to achieve their bit of the plan. So in our sort of ongoing example, the sales director might say they might need to sell 40 things a month and they've only got 2 salespeople. That's impossible. So we know that we're going to have to hire 6 more salespeople to sell 40 things a month because there's only so many meetings you can get, et cetera, et cetera. So it's helping and ensuring that, and they might have too many salespeople, some of whom aren't good enough. Okay, so we can measure that. You can say, well, listen, your sales team of 20, the bottom 4 are selling nothing. So that's data. What do we do about it? So it's ensuring that everyone in the organization, it's operations, it's marketing, it's sales, it's tech, it's compliance, everything, they have got the resources they need. So no one can say, well, I haven't. So you never hear this. I haven't hit my target because I don't have enough of X, Y, or Z. Okay, so ensuring that everyone has got what they need to deliver their bit of the plan.
So we have a value in our company, which is don't let anybody fail. And that's what I'm hearing there is you see, okay, sometimes because we're in, let's say you're in success, you're in the success side of the business, not necessarily that financially driven on that end. And they may not even realize they're signing up to a goal or quarterly ROC or a, you know, an objective. And then they may not even realize themselves what the right level of resource is to achieve that. And it's supporting them in the skills. So not just letting them get on with it, but get out of the CFO's office and onto the floor and say, listen, let's see, is this plan that we've come up for, is it actually achievable? And then actually doing something about that. So, I mean, what's nice there is, I mean, there's this persona that the finance team are running around cutting everything all the time, but like, actually, not necessarily so. It's about making the plan work, right? And sometimes that plan, it means cutting, sometimes it means investing more, and it's making sure you're not hanging them out to dry.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on. If the resource balance in a team is out, too high or too low, that needs to be rectified. And it's the finance director's job to make sure that it's spot on.
All right. The penultimate attribute you have is this catalyst. So catalyst sounds, you and I are both Europeans, Ben. We're getting into the world. This sounds like something I'd read in an American motivational manual, but I'll let you away with it. Maybe you can just explain a bit more what that means.
Absolutely. So catalyst is really about making sure that everyone's, and again, warning, cliche coming, that everyone's rowing in the same direction. So the nirvana, when you know that the catalytic competency has really worked and is that everybody in the organization, I mean everybody, uses the same language to describe success. So everyone's got a picture of what we're trying to achieve, how they fit into it, and they will talk to each other in a way that is not butting up against each other. In the introduction, we talked about a project-based organization. So I'll give you an example. When I was at First Source, we had a massive clash between ops and with sales. Okay, so we were a growing business, and the sales director would come and say, you've got to fire the ops director. I said, well, really? Why? What's happened? So, well, you know, I am closing the most extraordinary business here. We're never going to get another chance. And, you know, ops are whining that they can't deliver. You know, this is absolutely crazy. You know, they're slowing us all down. I go, oh, gosh, right, okay. Then they go away. Then the ops director comes and says, you absolutely have to fire the sales director. They are overloading us with work. They know we can't cope. It's going to sink the business. We're trying to run before we're walking. You know, you've got to fire them and get them someone reasonable. So that's an example of a project-based organization where two departments are bumping up against each other. And it's like they're definitely not using the same language to describe success. So a solution in that sort of situation would be, for instance, to change their incentive plan. So you could, what you could do is you could say to the salespeople, right, instead of your bonuses and commissions being simply on revenue, why don't we put a large weighting towards an NPS or net promoter score from the client a year in? Okay, so that immediately incentivizes the salesperson to a more sensible growth pattern, which works for the business and ops much better. And then you give the operations director the same incentives. All of a sudden, these guys become the best of friends. And guess what? We're actually growing the company at a rate that works for the company, but also now works for the employees. So that's an example of catalytic behavior, making sure that everyone's using the same language for success and everyone's operating in a way that is to the benefit of themselves, but also the business.
I mean, there's a lot of soft skills in this straight away. Like you can see, there's a lot more. It's about making that real, and it's about, I guess, understanding like what the right motivation for one sales manager is going to be different to another operations leader, etc. I can see where the catalyst role is really important, or the custodian role, in that it's kind of easy for sales. Like, you know, the numbers, it's all very sales driven. It's a bit more muddy in a lot of businesses where there's some, you know, maybe back office operations, could be in product development or R&D. How do you understand about, you know, what to look at there to create a model on that? And that's like, I'm just thinking my own business. I'd need someone really specialized who understood that. I don't even understand it myself. What should you be looking for in terms of R&D, you know, development, success metrics? Let's bring us on to the last one then, which is the strategist. I guess we all have a think we know what a strategist is, but I've heard as many definitions as I have heard the word uttered. So what does that mean to you?
Okay, well, I'll give an example here of good strategic, or what we believe to be good strategic thinking, or a high level of strategic competence. So the business plan that we discussed creating earlier, let's say we want to get a particular valuation within 3 years. Okay, so we start with the end in mind, we figure out what our revenue needs to be, what our gross margins, what our resources or overheads costs are going to be. We come back to today, and then we jump 2 years and we think, gosh, we're going to have to grow at like 400% in each year in order to achieve that. So organically, that's a real, it's impossible. That's never going to happen in this example. So, okay, fine. So if we're under pressure to achieve that valuation anyway, there's another string to our bow, which is acquisitions. We can buy companies. And actually, this is possibly a good time to talk about roll-ups and the concept behind roll-ups. If you envisage, in this example, a company that makes 3 million euros, pounds, dollars, whatever, 3 million currency a year profit, okay? Now, at that level, the multiplier, in other words, the multiplier that someone applies in order to value your business would be 5, say. So that means your business is worth 15 million pounds, let's say pounds. Smaller businesses in the same sector that make profit of, say, 1 million pounds a year, they're going to be valued at 4 million because their multiplier is 4. Why does a higher level of profit get a greater multiplier? Well, it's more robust. A 1 million shock to the 3 million profit company means they're still making 2 million quid. A 1 million shock to a 1 million making business means they make nothing. So as you get more profitable, the multiplier increases. And there is a non-linear or exponential relationship between your profit and the business value. So if you can get to 5 million profit, then your multiplier is more likely to be about 7. Okay, so 5 times 7 is 35. And you'll notice that the difference between a 3 million profit business and a 5 million profit business is the difference between 35 and 15, which is 20 million pounds. Okay, so what some smart guys who are now private equity mainly worked out is that if you've got a 3 million turnover, a 3 million profit business right now, you can buy 2 1 million profit businesses that cost 4 million each by that maths. So it costs you 8 million. So you can buy those two businesses, add them to your 3 million profit. You're now making 5 million profit and your valuation has gone up 20 million, but it only cost you 8 million to buy them. So you've magic 12 million out of the year. Out of the air, I should say. Okay. Now, this is why private equity partners and directors have got massive houses and yachts, because there's an alchemy here, all based upon the nonlinear relationship between profit and value. Okay. Now, in our situation, the right skilled finance director would be thinking strategically, saying, okay, we've got to hit this valuation in 3 years. There's no way we're doing this organically. Let's find a couple of businesses to buy. Oh, and I will go out, find them. I will raise the funds, whether it be debt or equity, and we want as much debt as possible so we don't give away equity shares. I will buy them. I will then integrate them into the business, and you need to sign the forms along the way. So again, this is another example of how the strategic competency in the finance team can be incredibly valuable. Nothing to do with the score or anything like that. But it's about how do we achieve our outcome in the best and most efficient way. So it's a combination of the organic versus acquisitional growth paths and providing advice to the board and the founder of the organization, whether that's appropriate or otherwise. And that's an example of strategic thinking.
Yeah, and it's very trendy on the internet right now, sort of micro PE firms that people are building, and they're looking at this roll-up strategy. Suddenly it seems like the cat's out of the bag, everyone's talking about it. And the only options you used to have were, you get sold, you know, you IPO, which is, let's face it, very unusual to get IPO'd. You get acquired, and they were the two really exits a business owner had. But now I see this emerging trend where people are saying, well, listen, we have good profitability. Maybe we can build a platform of companies, you know, build a several companies together. And this is something where you're looking at a Procurement Express to the QuickBooks store. The reason that you have pitched hiring a CFO better than anyone else I've heard say it so far is that basically what I heard was, if you have a $4 million business, you can hire a CFO and you can turn it into a $12 million business in about 36 months, you know? And there's no other hire that can do that, that I know of. That's the way every CFO should be pitching themselves, I think, at this stage.
Yeah, and actually further to the example I said before, we're also increasingly seeing that a business that's making $1 million profit is going out and buying a business that makes $3 million. You don't have to always buy companies that are smaller than you. So long as you can rationalize the acquisition, and guess who's doing that for you? It's your finance director. So long as you can rationalize it to the people who are going to provide you the funding to do it, knock yourself out. And so it's quite possible that the smallest player in the market can become the biggest by acquiring bigger businesses. And that's super strategic and quite intoxicating for some of our clients and the businesses that we're talking to about that.
And right now, I mean, the boomers are retiring. Tens of thousands of businesses are becoming on the market. You know, for all sorts of reasons, people are willing to give you their, you know, $5, $10, $15 million business. And there's opportunities there. If you have the right energy and a vision, it's never been a better time to follow this strategy. Listen, I've learned a lot talking to you about what we need to be looking at here. And certainly you've opened my eyes to what an A-grade CFO is. So Ben, who's your business hero and why?
So clearly Matthew Valance. He was the guy that hired me into First Source. He was only a few months older than me, a year, I think. And yet he was able to build this gargantuan business, which now has 40,000 employees, turns over $500 million. And his ability to stay patient under extraordinary stress and make good decisions under pressure, absolutely extraordinary man, very modest, very understated. If you met this gentleman, you wouldn't have a clue of what they've achieved. And he's moved on to doing some incredibly exciting things further to that. So 100% Matthew Valance.
That reminds me, I was listening this morning to Rory Stewart on the Rest is Politics podcast, and he was talking about Trudeau. Trudeau and him are basically the same age. And Trudeau was famous for being, he's a Canadian prime minister, and he's famous for being a ski instructor for most of his 20s and 30s and not really doing much with his life. Meanwhile, Rory Stewart had, you know, whatever, set up charities and been a governor in Iraq and been in the army and been a spy, I think, and all these wonderful things. And yet Trudeau popped out at the end and managed to become prime minister for 9 or 10 years now in one of the biggest economies in the world. So I'm hoping I can achieve that. Maybe I haven't got that much to compare with heroes, but I can come in strong at the end, maybe. This has been great. Listen, I know genuinely this is really a lot of great resources you have, and I know you make a lot of resources available for people. Where can people go deeper on, you know, how to hire or find a CFO or even figure out whether it's right for your business?
Well, you can email me at ben@acuityassociates.co.uk or info@acuityassociates.uk. We've got a whole bunch of collateral and tools that aren't on the website, but are available for those who apply. So if anyone wants to get in touch, or give us a ring, it's +44 0203 405 3080. And all of those details are also on our website, www.acuityassociates.co.uk.
Ben, who's an ideal customer for you? I mean, is it location matter, industry? Where's the sweet spot for someone who should really talk to you?
No, we help organizations all around the world, India, Europe, UK, North America. For the best value is when we're moving from the project to the process base. So that's anything between 10 to 20 employees up to 500. That's when the company really gets formulated. And the best businesses end up being the most efficient and productive. The others don't. So that's a really sweet spot where we know we can add enormous value.
Great. So thanks, Ben, and thanks, listeners, for making it this far in the podcast. As you know, I love talking to fractional CFOs, CFOs, experts, software companies that provide tools to the finance teams. If you're listening to this and you are one of those people, please reach out to me, james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com. Maybe we can shine a light on what you're doing.